For 8 seasons, she played Kimmy Gibbler, the friend and kooky neighbor to the Tanners, on Full House, before returning to acting years later to reprise the role in Fuller House on Netflix. This time out, Andrea Barber and I chatted up about working with all of those babies and animals, her new book, Full Circle from Hollywood to Real Life and Back Again, and her episode of choice, Birthday Blues. I'm Jerry Strauss, and this is The Laugh Track.
Do you need your weekly comedy fix? Relax while we visit the sitcoms you love, the jokes you remember, the characters you will never forget, and the stars that bring them to you. Sit back. It's The Laugh Track with Jerry Strauss.
Listen, again, thank you. I'm so excited to have you on this show. For all the obvious reasons, you know, obviously big fan of Full House, big fan of Fuller House, big fan of you, big fan of your book, everything that you've done. But there's an extra reason, and I'm going to tell you right now, for those people who have been listening to the Laugh Track since we started not too long ago, I'm going to go ahead and say it. This is the first conversation I've had on the show. You are the first person I've conversed with on this show that is relatively in my age group, which selfishly feels really cool, because we're going to be talking about shows that when you made them as a kid, I was a kid. And when you came back and did Fuller House and as an adult, I'm an adult. So it's
right.
kind of a relatable situation, much more so than, you know, other conversations we've had, which have also been often awesome. So please subscribe and check out our archives. But this will be a different path, so I'm excited.
I like it. We're breaking new ground here, and I love
it. Absolutely. And let me ask you something right off the bat, because I didn't know a lot about you. You know, I think a lot of people probably pigeonhole you for the Kimmy Gibbler character just because it's so defined and so well known and has spanned such this amazing a length of time, quite frankly, between Full House and Fuller House. I didn't realize that you had a start before Full House in the soap opera world. That's really surprising to me, because I guess I just have always thought of you as Kimmy Gibbler. Like, do you think of yourself as being a veteran of that soap opera world? Do you think about that time very much?
Oh gosh, no, I don't. I was 6 years old when I was on Days of Our Lives. And I did it for 3.5 years. So I started on my 6th birthday, believe it or not. They had a cake for me in the shape of a barber pole, appropriately enough. Very kind of the producers to put that together for me. I was on Days of Our Lives from age 6 to 9. And so I remember being on the set, and I remember the people I worked with, and I remembered balloons and cake, and, you know, I remember the things that a 6 to 9 year old would remember, you know, going to the park and, you know, going on location shoots and stuff like that. But I definitely don't consider myself a veteran of the soap opera world. That's hard work. Like, nobody works harder than soap opera actors, because they are doing 60 pages a day, every single day. They shoot long hours. They have to memorize a new script every single day. And, you know, I mentioned this in my book, but it's like boot camp for actors. I mean, there is nothing harder than doing a soap opera. So I was lucky, you know, I was a kid, so I didn't have as many scenes. I didn't have as many lines, and I didn't have to work every single day. So for me, it was sort of an easy transition into Hollywood life. But, you know, I don't think you're alone in that. You identify me mostly, mainly 100% as Kimmy Gibbler, because that's all that I've really been known for most of the public out there. I did Kimmy Gibbler for 8 years as a child, and then for the last 5 years as an adult. And she's great. Like, she said, what a fabulous character to play. So I don't mind at all that that's what I'm most known for, is for the role of Kimmy Gibbler.
And the most important thing is that 8 years and 5 years, but in between, Kimmy Gibbler never actually went away, because Full House has never really gone away. It's still so popular all over the world. You mentioned your book. We need to hit that right at the beginning, because this is a really big thing and really cool. Full Circle from Hollywood to Real Life and Back. This was the book you came out with last year. And what a story you've had of being, you know, as you said, having those bookends of various parts of your career where you know, 8 years on Full House, and then going away, you know, almost entirely from the show business world, and then coming back. What an unpredictable a voyage it must have been. Do you feel, looking back, like it was all kind of meant to be, or is it still just as surprising and spontaneous that Fuller House happened and that you've been back in the limelight all over again?
Well, it definitely feels meant to be, because it always felt right, you know, from the very first minute I got the phone call from Jeff Franklin, creator of both shows, asking me to come back and play Kimmy Gibbler again to do Fuller House. It just felt right from the very beginning. Although at the same time, nobody could have predicted this. Like, you know, 30 years ago or 25 or whatever, when we were saying goodbye to Full House, we never could have predicted we would get to do this show again as adults. Reboots weren't a thing back in the day. And I think Fuller House was one of the first to come back and do a show like this. I know Girl Meets World, which was a spinoff of Boy Meets World, I think they were kind of like the first ones to do it, but we were the first to do it on a streaming platform like Netflix. And so nobody could have predicted it. I never could have predicted it. You know, when I left Hollywood at 18 and I went on to live a very normal life, going to school, going to college, getting married, having kids, having a very normal job at a university, I never would have predicted I would have gone back to Hollywood. But it just felt right. You know, it felt comfortable, and I trusted our executive producers, who were the same executive producers that we had 30 years ago, to do right by the show and to keep the legacy of the show alive, and to, you know, we didn't want to do a cheesy movie, you know, like a remake, like a Brady Bunch type movie that just kind of tanks and is embarrassing. You know, we wanted to, no offense to the Brady Bunch people or the fans out there, you know, but they also had another great comeback with their HGTV special, a couple of months ago. But anyways, yeah, no, I trusted the people that were in charge, and I trusted my gut, and it felt right. And I knew I would love going to work every day with Candace Cameron Bure and Jody Sweetin. They're my best friends, and I knew it would be a blast. And it was. It was great. So it does feel meant to be. It feels like everything happened the way it was supposed to be.
You know, and on this show, I know we always try and take great care to explain the premise of the shows we're talking about for those who may be unfamiliar, who for whatever reason may never have seen this show. It seems almost insane to do that for Full House, because who doesn't know what Full House is? But let's just lay it out real quick. The original Full House, I would say, one of the defining family sitcoms of all time. Really, a lot of the cliches that we talk about when you think of a family sitcom, you know, a lot of those were first done or best done on Full House, you know, whether maybe a little cheesy, maybe a little heartwarming, but definitely always entertaining and always funny, which is why the show was so popular and so long-lasting. And then Fuller House comes along now several years ago, as you said, on Netflix, and it was a lot of those same things updated for these times, but also a little bit of not laughing at the original premise of Full House, but laughing with it a little bit of self-referential material, just a little bit, just enough to you to let you guys kind of have a little fun with what Full House was and could be now. How did you feel about that edge? Because there was none of that in the original Full House. The original Full House was very straight up. This one played with itself a little bit, so to speak.
Absolutely. I loved it. I mean, you can't take yourself too seriously when you're on a show like Full House or Fuller House. And we do laugh at ourselves, because we recognize the absurdity of the situations that the characters get themselves in, you know, whether that's like, you know, there's a cow in the kitchen that we're trying to hide under the dining table, or, you know, that it takes us 30 minutes to put on a medieval fair in the backyard of the Tanner house, which seems to grow, you know, according to the needs of every episode. Sometimes it's twice as big, sometimes it's twice as small. You know, these are ridiculous premises, but they're funny and they're outlandish, and it's, you gotta laugh at it. You know, we laughed at it when we would read these scripts, and we're like, this is so outlandish, but we love it. And, you know, there's a lot of humor, like you mentioned, in the scripts, but there's a lot of, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod, to these things. And right up until, you know, one of the last episodes of the series, which you haven't seen yet, because the last 9 episodes don't come out until later this year. But yeah, we make reference to it all the time, just about how ridiculous the circumstances are. But that's what makes it fun. We wouldn't want to do a boring show, that's for sure. So we got to make it silly and exciting. And as a result, we've gotten to do a lot of great dance numbers on the show. We have lots of crazy animals on the show. The costumes are fun and fantastic. And there's something for everybody. You know, there's lessons there for parents and children. And there's, you know, issues that mom, you know, as moms that we're going through that moms can relate to, and teenage issues with social media and high school. There's cute babies. If you're into cute babies, you know, there's really something for everyone. So I think that all of these elements is what makes Fuller House and Full House, you know, a very multi-generational show that you can sit down and watch, you know, with whether you're a grandma or a parent or a child. It's really meant for everybody, and everybody can get something out of it.
I'm going to put you on the spot for a second, and we're going to go back to Full House in a moment, but Fuller House, all these wacky moments we're talking about, I mean, you guys went way out there with some of this stuff. what can you name one of those moments that we've seen so far that's one of your favorites?
Well, oh gosh, well, there's so many. I think when we did the Bollywood episode where we some, you know, managed to, we were putting together a retirement party for DJ's veterinarian boss, who was going to India. And so, you know, Kimmy Gibbler whips up this Bollywood themed party and just happens to have all of the tents and the, you know, it might've been a little culturally insensitive also at the same time, but we had so much fun dressing in the costumes and learning, you know, some very traditional, well, Americanized traditional Bollywood dancing, from a choreographer. It was so fun. I think that's also the episode where we had a cow in the kitchen. So yeah, that episode might take the cake as far as ludicrousness. I don't know. There's just so many.
I love the idea of those few people who have never seen these shows before, just trying to put it together in their head. What we're talking about, trying to imagine all this stuff, because you've covered a lot of ground. About 3 minutes, we're talking about Bollywood dances, cows in the middle of the kitchen, a yard that keeps changing size.
It does. The backyard is never the same size in any two episodes. It is always, yeah, it's always a different size or shape, or sometimes there's a neighbor on the other side of the fence and sometimes there's not. You know, it's really just a shape-shifting property, and that's what's so great about it. You don't know where the Tanners and Fullers and Gibblers store all of these party materials or costumes.
I mean, I worry about city ordinances. I feel like there should be some tickets being distributed at some point. Everyone in this neighborhood is in big trouble.
It's true. And there have been several episodes where there's a car in the backyard too, and none of us can figure out where the driveway is. That leads to the backyard, you know, of a very hilly San Francisco. Like, nobody knows, but we just, you know, don't ask questions, just roll with it. You know, that's the motto of Fuller House, is just, you know, just put your head down and keep going forth. Don't ask too many questions.
Right. And of course, the front door is always open. So, you know, not too many worries about.
Very safe in the suburban San Francisco.
So going back to when you were a kid, going back to the original Full House, you know, we talk a lot on this show about just kind of the process of making a sitcom, which is, you know, we've said it a million times here already, that perfect marriage of making TV and theater, live theater. But you have sort of an added essence to it. You know, every sitcom has its own challenges, its own spin on how they do things. You guys had, you know, classically two of the most challenging things to work with in the form of animals and babies.
Yes. So yes. Oh, yes. That's the old adage. Don't work with babies or dogs. And we had multiples of all of the above.
What was that actually like? Because, you know, you're filming these scenes, you know, apparently a lot of it was in front of the studio audience, right? Was that still the case, right?
Oh, yeah. Every Friday night. Yep.
So how did it work when you have to work with, you know, especially when, you know, it's very young babies, and of course animals are animals, but like, was it just, was that all in front of a studio audience as well? Or were there special filming schedules for those scenes?
Well, the answer to your question is yes and no. It's both. And I noticed it mostly in Fuller House because, you know, as an adult, I'm more aware of the legalities and the issues surrounding, you know, child labor laws. And then this last season, season five, we had very, very young babies. We had allegedly a newborn character on the show, Stephanie's baby. So there was a lot of considerations. And I'll tell you right now, the dog, you know, Cosmo, rest in peace. You know, we're very sad that we lost him a few months ago. But he was by far the best actor on the show, hands down. He was the most well-trained, the most well-behaved. He took it the most seriously. And he was definitely the most reliable. So, you know, animals are unpredictable. But as far as golden retrievers are concerned, they're pretty great animals. And they're very highly trainable. And they just want to make their owners happy. So Cosmo was just this, you know, big doofus, this wonderful panting dog that always had a smile on his face and just wanted to make his trainer happy. So working with him really wasn't that much of a challenge at all. There was one episode. Let's see. Have you seen it yet? Yeah, I think you have. Where there's a dance sequence. The kids put on a dance for DJ's 40th birthday. I don't know if you've seen this yet. Okay. Anyways, I'll tell you, it's not a spoiler, even if you haven't seen it. Anyway, so the kids on the show choreograph a dance, and you know, everyone has a role, including Tommy, who's a 4-year-old, and Cosmo, who's a golden retriever. So that was probably the most challenging scene to film with the dog, because, you know, how do you get a dog to like turn around in a circle with the beat, you know, with the other kids? So that was a little bit of a challenge to film that. I think they just had to put a single camera on him and, you know, the trainer would just try to get him to turn around in circles. But the babies are a different matter. You know, that's very challenging because the young babies, the newborns who weren't newborns, they were 2 or 3 month old babies that were acting as the newborn baby on the show. They are not allowed to work in front of a studio audience. They can only work certain hours of the day. So we could only work with them between 9:30 a.m. and 11 a.m. That was one chunk. And then between, I want to say 2 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. in the afternoon. Those are the only time slots that we had. We had 90 minutes twice a day. And then the babies themselves, you know, one baby can only be on set for, I want to say 20 minutes or 30 minutes at a time. Very limited amount of time, which is hard when you're working with a cast of 1,000, like Fuller House, where there could easily be 20 actors in a scene at a time. And then children of various ages. So, it's difficult. We had strict rules. We all had to put hand sanitizer on our hands if we were going to touch the baby. Only the actors that were working, that were supposed to be holding the baby could touch the baby. And the baby always had to go through a baby handler. Like, the mom or dad never came down onto the set. It was always, you know, a baby wrangler or a nanny that would handle the baby between the dressing room and the set. So, you know, very strict rules. You know, our first AD was like, quiet on set. We got a baby on set and everybody had to be quiet and no extra bodies on the floor. Nobody that wasn't specifically working a job on the floor could be on the floor. So if you were a family friend or, you know, someone just hanging out, you had to get off the stage. Only the essential players could be on the stage.
Just personally speaking, because just hearing all this is like my blood pressure is going higher and higher just from the stress of having to deal with all this. So, you know, you dealt with it as a kid and then you dealt with it, you know, in more recent times. Did you feel like, was that a challenge for everyone in the cast, everyone in the crew? Like, was that sort of an extra level of stress to kind of, you know, just to be in that situation, like, consistently at any point in your life, whether it was the original Full House or more so as an adult, or was that just something that you got used to, or was it always something you had to kind of grit your teeth and bear?
Well, it wasn't stressful for me at all, you know, personally speaking, because, you know, it wasn't, the stress wasn't riding on my shoulders. The stress is is riding on the director's shoulders and the first AD who has to keep everything together. And, you know, as moms, when in Fuller House, we're moms in real life and on the show. So handling a newborn, you know, babies cry, babies spit up, babies poop, you know, we're used to this. This is not a stressful situation. So, you know, that wasn't stressful for us, but there, you know, there was one actor on the show, Adam Hagenboo, who plays, the fiance of Stephanie Tanner. He had never really handled babies before. And so it really stressed him out when he had to, you know, he had to take the baby from Jody and put the baby in a car seat and make sure that, you know, and this one particular day, the baby was not having it. The baby was just screaming her head off and wanted nothing to do with anybody. And so it is stressful if you haven't been around babies before and there's one screaming at the top of her lungs. That's very stressful. And you know, you only have 30 minutes and you know, the director's like, we got to get this shot. Let's just get the shot so we can release the baby and move on. Yeah, that's a very stressful situation. So I think that stressed Adam out a little bit because he didn't want to break the baby. He didn't want to upset the baby. And, you know, we're like, well, you know, babies cry. And we had backups. You know, we had six babies in total to play the role of one newborn. So if one baby cried or spit up or whatever, it's like, all right, we're bringing the backup. But there was this one.
I've just got this image of these babies lined up like in boxes and, oh, well, we dropped one. It's crying. Let's just pop another box open and grab number three.
Well, it sounds really impersonal and insensitive, but that's just the business. You know, that's just what we had to do. And then this one particular day, I think this was all the same episode. There were several close-ups of the baby, you know, it was like baby's first food or baby's first something. So we had a close-up of the baby. And then we kept mixing and matching the baby. So if you look closely, you'll notice that, yeah, you know, there are some shots where the baby doesn't quite look the same as it did a few minutes prior, because it's a different baby and it's wearing the same, you know, little bonnet hat. It's wearing the same onesie, but, we had boys and girls, we had boys playing the role of a baby girl, you know, just put a pink little hat on them. That's just the nature of the business. You know, if one cries, bring in the backup.
Yeah, that's going to come back and haunt that kid in high school. I guarantee it. Nothing goes away anymore.
little Julian, a little boy, a little baby boy, a three-month-old boy, he's the one that played the baby the most in this season 5. And he was just the cutest little thing. Oh my gosh, he was so happy and so content most of the time, which is why we used him the most. But yeah, you know, he had a little pink clothes and ruffles and everything. And we're just like, oh, Julian, you look so cute. And it's so sad that, you know, but whatever, he's adorable. He won't know when he's, you know, he's got some money that his parents can put away in the bank now for him for when he turns 18. And, you know, we can all have a good laugh at it later.
It's like the old Johnny Cash song, The Boy Named Sue. It's just going to, it's going to toughen him up later.
It will.
So Andrea, now, you chose an episode, as we do every episode, every show here on the Laugh Track. We go and we dive deep into an episode that the guest chooses. And you chose a couple different options. And the one that we went with here, I think, is fantastic. It's called Birthday Blues.
Aha, yes. I was hoping you would choose that one.
That's it, man. Season 6, episode 14. And you know, I love these episodes that are chosen when a show is, you know, beyond the first couple of episodes, when it's really figured out what it is and, you know, who all the characters are, and it's really kind of up and running and in its prime. And this is definitely an episode like that, but it's also a great episode because it's got a lot of Kimmy Gibbler, and it's got maybe a bit of a different side of Kimmy Gibbler, because, you know, you are the ultimate comic relief for so much of this show. You're probably, you know, I don't know, you know, they say boxers pound for pound, you know, the hardest hitter, whatever. Well, comedy pound for pound, you're probably the funniest performer, you know, in my opinion.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you bring the calm to the sitcom, I'd say.
Oh, thank you. Well, I had a lot of great material to work with, I tell you. You know, you can't just throw a character at somebody like Kimmy Gibbler and expect them to, you know, phone it in. Like, you really just have to go for it. And she was such a fun character to play. Yeah, I just had the best material to work with and the best lines. So I can't take all the credit for it, but thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, no problem. But this episode is something where, even beyond the comedy, you get some different feels here, so to speak. You got some different emotions going. And this is all about, it's centered around Kimmy Gibbler's 16th birthday, which is coming up. And, mm-hmm. you know, obviously a big moment for you. Theoretically, a big moment for your best friend, DJ. But DJ is a bit distracted because she is focused on her relationship with her boyfriend, Steve, which is nearing its six-month anniversary. So mm-hmm. for the first time, you know, certainly a rarity in your guys' pretty much lifelong friendship, Kimmy Gibbler is a bit on the outside looking in, and this mm-hmm. is not flying very well. Did you, you know, at the time now, this was a big focus for you for this episode. When you see something like this coming up, when you read that script at that point in your life, is this exciting? Is it daunting? Is it something that you're really up for, or was it just kind of business as usual?
Oh, it was exciting. As I remember reading it and thinking, oh my gosh, like, I actually have an episode where I'm the A storyline. Like, I, you know, I'm the focus of this episode, and that doesn't happen to a character like Kimmy Gibbler. You know, like you said, she's the comic relief. She gets the one-liners. She walks in, she says her zingers, and then she leaves. For me to get a whole episode like this devoted to me and my character, and to get the chance to show a different side of Kimmy Gibbler, one who's vulnerable and hurt and has emotions that aren't just, you know, laugh, laugh, zinger, zinger. You know, it shows the real human side of Kimmy Gibbler. I was ecstatic to do it. I was very excited. I thought it was a very well-written episode. It was super funny. There were lots of great visuals with the Tanners trying to throw together this last minute birthday party to cover up the fact that DJ forgot about the birthday and didn't plan anything for her best friend. So you have, you know, every member of the Tanner household, you know, putting up toilet paper streamers and baking a hash brown cake and wrapping up random items and tchotchkes in the house and pretending that they're gifts. And all the while, you know, Kimmy is kind of oblivious at first. She's thinking, wow, this is great. She's so touched. She's like, you guys threw me this wonderful birthday party and I love it. And oh my gosh, you know, hash brown cake, that's my favorite flavor of cake. You know, it's such quintessential Kimmy Gibbler, and, you know, her attitude of, you know, the glass is half full, and, you know, everything is sparkly and bright and wonderful. And she appreciates all this love and attention that she's getting, not knowing until, you know, towards the end of the episode that, oh no, this was all just a cover up for the fact that DJ forgot. And when Kimmy does finally come to that realization that her best friend of, I don't know how many years, you know, at least a decade, forgot her birthday because she was too invested in her boyfriend of 6 months, you know, Kimmy has some real, very valid emotions about that. And I very much enjoyed getting to play that role. Because it's just, I never got to do that before. You know, I was never given the chance to do that as the comic relief character. And those were, you know, as a teenage girl, you do get, those are very real emotions. You get hurt. Friends fight. You know, best friends argue and hurt one another. And so I think it was one of those important episodes as far as an important message and an important lesson, and something that I think other teenage girls could relate to. And I was just thrilled to get to do something that was not just a zingy one-liner, that I got to actually show emotion, and I got to kind of prove to myself and prove to everybody out there that, you know, I'm not just a one-trick pony. You know, I can do other things besides be the offbeat character. So I was thrilled. I was excited. And I got to do more of it in Fuller House too. So it's always a blessing to be able to stretch and, you know, stretch your acting chops a little bit and do something that you don't get to do a lot.
Definitely. And you know, in the process, you know, this really was sort of almost a reinvention or an expansion of the Kimmy Gibbler character, because, you know, like you said, like, we knew about her kind of zany personality and liking a lot of crazy different things and all the one-liners and everything. But I think what you would learn from this is kind of what you alluded to, which is that all the superficial stuff that they did, she appreciated it. She wasn't picky about it. It didn't even necessarily matter what they did. It was really the intent behind it that she appreciated and then was disappointed by when she found out that the true intent and the love that she thought was there, the attention towards her, it wasn't necessarily genuine. It was something she had misinterpreted. So that was really all that she cared about. All the other stuff, you know, fine, but it was the thought behind it, both positive and negative, that's what affected her. And I think that's a real deep take on who Kimmy Gibbler was, more so than we'd ever seen before. So that really, I mean, to me, that's like an elevation of a character from one dimensional to being a real person. And that's probably, you know, like the biggest leap that Kimmy Gibbler ever took in Full House.
I agree. And that's the exact reason it's hands down my favorite episode of all 8 seasons of Full House. I mean, selfishly, I'm sure, you know, the other actors would choose different episodes, but for me personally, yeah, it's just, I mean, for as much as this character was made fun of and, you know, everybody rolled their eyes and, oh, Kimmy Gibbler is walking in there, you know, and the men on the show would say really mean things to this character. You know, they would make fun of this teenage girl that would be walking in their back door, and they were actually kind of mean to her at times. And so as much as this character was made fun of, all of those reasons that you said are the reasons why I love this character so much, is because she wasn't picky. She wasn't judgy. She just wanted to be loved by people that were important to her. And it didn't matter if it was, you know, a high-end party or toilet paper streamers. She just appreciated that people were showing her love and attention. How can you not love a character like that? And that's the side of Kimmy Gibbler that I always loved and appreciated the most.
You know, a classic kind of evolution of certain sitcom characters is something we've seen time and time again, sort of that comic relief character who ends up getting more popular maybe than ever would have been expected, and they eventually become a big player. You know, you've seen it with, you know, going back to the cliche of the Fonz and, you know, Steve Urkel and all these different characters who, you know, maybe were intended just to show up once in a while, maybe just once. Do you put Kimmy Gibbler in that category as someone who maybe the character was intended to be more minor, but then through the course of time, you were able to kind of bring something bigger to it?
Well, I wouldn't put Kimmy Gibbler in the same category as the Fonz. You know, that's
I would.
Oh no, I wouldn't go that far. Because this Full House and Fuller House has always been very much an ensemble show, and so it's not about any one character in particular. It's about the family. It's about the people who reside in the house and the people who love each other and have become family, not necessarily through bloodlines, but just because they're there for each other and they love each other. So, in that sense, no, I think Kimmy Gibbler is, you know, one of many very important players on the show. But, I will agree with you in that she was only meant to be a bit player, because, I auditioned for the role when I was 10 years old, and it was supposed to be a one-time guest appearance as, you know, the next door neighbor DJ's friend, Kimmy. And, I don't even know exactly what happened, but I remember doing this first episode and I didn't even really have a feel for the character. I hadn't really embraced it. I was just sort of like, okay, I'm just going to say these lines and look cute because I'm 10 years old. But then they asked me back to do, you know, 4 more episodes. So I did a total of 5 that first season. And then I was asked back for the second season to do even more than that, until, I don't know, it was season 4 maybe or 5 that I was finally made a series regular. So yeah, for this one-time guest appearance that turned into 8 years of my life and then came back and turned into 5 more years of my adult life. Yeah, I think that's pretty incredible. And I think, I wouldn't take credit for that personally. I think it's just because Kimmy Gibbler is a funny, great character to watch. She brings a lot of comedy to the show, but she's also very relatable because not everybody can relate to being, you know, the perfect popular girl on the show, but they can relate to feeling a little bit different or made fun of or a little bit of an outcast. I think a lot of people, I think that resonates with a lot of people. A lot of people have told me that it resonates with them. So maybe that's why she became more than just a bit player on Full House. I don't know. I don't know exactly what happened, but I sure am glad that it did happen for whatever the reason.
Yeah, we all are. We really all are. So look, before we let this episode go, is there any other distinct memories of making this episode or just favorite parts of this episode? It's your favorite episode of the entire series. Is there anything else that sticks out in your mind that is, you know, would be a highlight reel worthy for you for this episode?
For that episode, oh, it's the dress. It's the outfit that I wore, which was, you know, I didn't always love my costumes on Full House. I was very insecure as a teenage girl, and I was very gangly and awkward. And I had to wear awkward costumes on top of that. So I often didn't love what I was wearing. But this particular outfit for my 16th birthday, which, you know, had a blue feather boa off the shoulders, and it was this, you know, sort of an animal print top and then a mini skirt with some neon leggings underneath. You know, I just felt so cool in that outfit. I was just like, it's such quintessential 90s. And it's awesome. I tried to recreate this look once for a theme party that I went to. And I got pretty close too. I think that's somewhere on my Instagram. If you do a deep dive on my Instagram, but, nice. Yeah, no, that's just, I remember loving that outfit out of all of my costumes, most of which I hated. This was one that I really, really loved and felt confident in, which was good. Cause I needed to feel confident in order to pull off this episode.
Well, look, if you guys are in the middle of revisiting Full House or you plan to do so anytime soon, make sure that you check this one out. It's a highlight, Birthday Blues, season 6, episode 14. And of course, we're also talking about Fuller House, which, you know, we're in the midst of awaiting the final batch of episodes. You guys have already kind of called your home run shot. So we know that the upcoming episodes are going to be the final ones for Fuller House. So, hey, look, that leads to the question that I'm sure you've been asked a million times. When in life do you expect Fullest House? Because we know that's going to be coming someday. I mean, are you just expecting that call at this point someday in the future?
Oh man, it can't come soon enough. And nobody's received any official phone calls yet. So, you know, it's not a sure thing, although everybody's talking about it. You know, everybody wants it to happen, from the fans to the cast to the Warner Brothers executives. Everybody has mentioned, you know, what a great idea this is. So I would love for it to happen. I don't know. I feel like we would have to be grandmothers, you know, DJ, Stephanie, and Kimmy, we would have to be of grandmother age. So I'm guessing, I don't know, 10 years maybe? If people are still invested in the show in 10 years, I think they will be. We have the most loyal fan base ever. Like, they've just been so devoted and loyal for 33 years. I can't imagine they're going anywhere anytime soon. So I would do it tomorrow if I got the phone call. I would come back for Fullest House, you know, any sort of version of the show that they want to make. I would be there because I love this show and I love the people with all of my heart. But I don't know. We'll see. To be determined. If we write enough letters, maybe it'll happen.
and hey, look, in the meantime, of course, we've got the memories. We've got, you know, everything available to us to relive and watch all over again, Full House, Fuller House, and of course your book Full Circle, which, again, what an amazing and frank book for you to put out, just to, you know, really break down just this crazy journey you've been on, from, you know, from primetime stardom to regular life and all the way back again. And the story continues, so we can't wait to see where everything goes from here.
Thanks. Me too. I hope, you know, I'll be writing a part two, you know, fuller circle in another 40 years. And hopefully I'll have a lot more great stories to tell. That includes lots of Kimmy Gibbler stories as well.
Awesome. Well, listen, before you get out of here, where would you like for people to follow you slash stalk you slash, you know, just try to follow what's going on with you, whether you like it or not?
Well, you can always reach me at my Instagram, which is at Andrea Barber. I'm not super active on social media right now, but I'm always checking my direct messages on Instagram, and I read every single one, even if I don't reply. So if you want to, you know, write me a message and tell me anything about my book that resonated with you, if it has to do with mental health or Full House or anything. If you want to send me videos of your kid doing the Gibbler Gallop, I fully welcome those videos. I love watching them. And if you're a diehard Full House or Fuller House fan, I would strongly encourage you to go to my YouTube page, because I've got tons and tons of behind the scenes footage. I did several vlogs over a season and a half, the last season and a half of a season before that. And so for anybody who's interested in sitcoms or what it's like to be on set or what it's like backstage, my vlog is full of all sorts of goodness that you will just gobble up.
You're talking to my people right now, and I appreciate that.
Andrea, I'm speaking your love language.
Yes. Thank you so much, man. This has been such a great opportunity to get to know you a little better and get to kind of experience through your eyes some of the things that you've been through in your amazing career. And we can do so even more. We can relive it through your book. So thank you for all that.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me on your show. This has been such a great time reliving these wonderful memories. I love talking about it.
Great, great, great. Thank you again. And thanks to everyone here this week for checking us out here on the Laugh Track. Thanks, guys. We'll see you next time.